everyone, and welcome to Not About the Weather, episode number 24. My name is Karen. I haven't been here in a while, but here I am, and today I'm joined by Mitch and Brittany. Hi, guys.
Hello.
This is a super special episode because I basically strong-armed the both of these guys into doing this with me, but they're my friends, so they were super nice about it. Who knows if they'll still talk to me after this episode, but we're going to worry about that later. Today, we're going to be talking about tremors, and I'm really excited. I don't know if anybody else is really excited, but we'll get to that in a moment. I just want to remind everyone that if you would like to get into contact with us, we are NATW Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Gmail. Our website is notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, which you can also follow as a Tumblr account and send us an ask or, you know, just chat with us in general. NATWpodcast.com also exists as a hub for both this podcast and Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Guys, I almost forgot what it was called. It's been so long. Which Natalie and I started and we talked about Teen Wolf. And hey, maybe sometime soon we'll resurrect that. We'll see. But that's not the discussion for today. Today's discussion is tremors. Who is excited?
We're here.
We're here. That's about all you're getting.
Yeah. So the exciting news is I got an email from a PR agent for Tremors 6, A Cold Day in Hell. And they were like, hey, do you want to interview Michael Gross? And if you know anything about me, it's that I unapologetically love the Tremors franchise. I've loved it for years and years and years. And interviewing Michael Gross was like a bucket list thing. So I couldn't turn it down. We decided to put it on Weather, which was really exciting. And it's about a 20-minute interview. And it's going to be at the end of the episode. So I guess if you want to just forward and go there. That would be cheating, but you're allowed to, I guess. I won't know if you do. But I wanted to kind of do a whole Tremors episode because I don't get to talk about it a whole lot. We don't cover it on Hypeable because it's a direct-to-DVD franchise now. And yeah, it's not really one of our big ones. But Mitch, you've seen the first Tremors before.
Yeah, I just rewatched it last night. It's been a while, and it was a whole experience, can I say? Because it's funny. It's like you want to enjoy it, and you sometimes do, and then you kind of get the idea that it was maybe meant to be schlock, or maybe it was just meant to be a parody of Jaws. Either way, it's a thing that exists, and now there's six of them, so
yeah.
I have to take it or leave it.
Yeah. See, actually, the original idea for the movie and the original title of the movie was Land Sharks. So it is supposed to be supposed to kind of be like a thing off of Jaws. It's definitely a horror comedy. And for anybody who's here just for the hell of it, Tremors debuted in 1990 and it has since become a cult classic film. So it's one of those that like, it's so bad it's good. Or if you're Brittany, it's so bad it's still bad. But I love it, and it's obviously spawned a lot of different movies from then, and it's been 28 years since this movie came out, and they are still going, which I think is a testament to the franchise and the characters. But Mitch, you, like, at least in my mind, I kind of associate you, or I call you, like, our horror guy, because you watch a lot of horror movies and stuff. I guess coming from that aspect, like, what do you think of this? Because it is a horror comedy, you know, like it is supposed to be funny, but it's also a monster movie.
I think it did what Jaws did and it made it funny, but elongated. It was like Jaws feels like it has more of a buildup and this one does. It kind of just gets right to like the chomping. So I think that's the issue here. It's that like you feel like you're in the climax the whole time. And that's exhausting. And that's where I just at some point would just kind of shut off my brain. And actually what cued me into Jaws wasn't the idea of the poster literally being the Jaws poster, but of the dolly zoom that they do, because I think that was used first in Jaws or made famous from it. It's every action shot. It's when you zoom out or in, and you move the opposite direction that you're doing, it creates like a background that's moving and the person's staying the same. Frame. So it's really interesting and really cool. And I love when movies do it as like a reaction, like an oh my God moment. Buffy does it a lot too, actually. But here, I think that's when it struck me. I was like, oh, they're literally just doing Jaws. They're being very unabashed about it.
Yeah, I think that was very intentional. And I was watching some of the behind the scenes stuff too, because I rewatched it today too. I'll always rewatch it whenever I get a chance. But I was rewatching some of the behind the scenes stuff too. And they did say like the original idea really was like, what if there were like land sharks? And what if there was a monster underground? Out in the desert, what would that be like? And but
see, I think they had two major issues there. They show the monster too early, and they show it very often. That's kind of one issue. And the other one is that, I mean, I guess it's not trying to be scary, so whatever, take care or leave that. But also, the exhaustion part comes from the fact that there's like, what, six or five? And it's like, oh my God, they have to kill all of these? When it's Jaws, it's just Jaws.
Yeah. Right?
So you're like, okay, we'll take down him, we're good to go. Like, they even had, you know, the guy that's getting like chomped on as the boat's like sinking and he's like going down into the animatronic Jaws mouth. They did that with Finn when she was wrapped up in the barbed wire at one point. So it's weird because they don't kill off as many characters as Jaws. So once again, kind of exhausting. You're like, I just want like let's just do away with Reba at this point, whatever.
Well, you know, Perfection Nevada only has a population of 14 people. So right. There are only so many people they could kill off. So originally I had wanted Natalie to come onto this episode because we've been podcasting for like 5-6 years now. And Tremors has always been kind of a joke between us. She knows how much I love it. She's never seen it. I really want her to see it, but she's traveling right now, so she couldn't be on. So I was like, who would best be able to fill those shoes? Who would be able to make fun of me about how much I love this movie the most? And immediately Brittany came to mind.
Oh, hello. Here I am.
Yes. And Brittany, you were actually just with Natalie and hi. Leo. And when I messaged her, I was like, hey, will you please do this thing for me? I really need to get this interview up. Well, you just take one for the team.
Literally was sitting across from Natalie when you texted to me and I said, Natalie, what are you doing to me? And she goes, I'm sorry, what?
And how did she, because you knew nothing about Tremors going in, right?
Correct.
How did she describe it to you?
Luckily, I wrote it down.
You knew this was coming.
Yep. And I have it ready to access. So she said, well, first I asked Karen if it was okay if Natalie gave me a description. And she gave the green light. And Natalie said, I believe it is about worms in the desert that travel by exploding butts with Kevin Bacon.
Which is absolutely not wrong. But the exploding butts don't come until movie 3.
Oh, okay. I was like, did I miss something?
But yeah, pretty much exactly right. I feel kind of bad that I made Brittany watch this, but also not, because she is a good friend and I promised that I would buy her coffee in exchange.
Well, to make up for my $2.99 YouTube rental.
Yeah.
So it exists on HBO, but it's not on until like my TV was like, it'll be on May 14th. And I'm like, not soon enough.
Damn. So, okay. What did you think?
Well, having only Natalie's wrong description going into it, I knew that Kevin Bacon would arrive, and he did. And I actually liked the friendship of the two lads that we got to hang out with the whole movie. I thought that they were very funny together. Reba, brilliant. Was not expecting her to go all like, you know, secret army bunker on me, though. That was a twist that I did not see coming.
Right.
She pulls it off, though.
She does, but like when she's like first on screen, you're like, oh, Reba, how cute. And then I'm like, oh, Reba, put that gun down. Like, what are you doing, girl? But overall, it was bad. It was a very bad movie. I don't think I'll ever watch it again. I don't think I'll explore 2 through 6. And I'm still a little upset that Karen tried to make me feel better about this movie by saying that SpongeBob based an episode on it. Okay, low blow, because, you know, I'll, like, give into anything to do with SpongeBob.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, my God, this is going to make everything better. And it didn't. It really didn't.
And actually, in weird fate, I just made Natalie sit through SpongeBob the Musical the same day that Karen asked me to sit through Tremors. So I feel like there was some universe at work there.
It's all cyclical.
Every time something happened, like, I love the SpongeBob musical, but I also love SpongeBob. And anytime something happened in the musical that, like, either a song was about to start or someone did something, that I could just hear Natalie next to me being like, oh, God. Like,
wait, did she not enjoy it?
No. I think that they both enjoyed it.
Okay.
But it was just, like, an experience. So watching her watch it was almost as fun as watching Ethan Slater play SpongeBob.
Did you know Reba was in it, Britt?
Did what?
Did you know that Reba was in this movie before you saw it?
No, I did not. So
this is, like, one of her few acting creds. She didn't really do much. She, like, chose Tremors strategically. Maybe just to have the end credits song. I'm not sure.
Actually, when the end credits started, I'm like, Reba!
Right.
This was her first role, and the director, this was his first movie. And so when, I believe it was Universal, was like, hey, we'd really like to have Reba come in and read for this. And he was like, oh my God, I don't know if I want an actress who, like, doesn't know what she's doing just because this is my first time directing, but there's no reason why we can't just have her come in. And he said that as soon as she walked in, like, he fell in love and it was all perfect. She does a great job. I think she's a natural.
She's totally precious. I love it. And I think it's funny, too, that this movie comes before Scream, because that did a big stunt casting with Drew Barrymore, and then they kill her off in the opening sequence. I kind of expected that as soon as I saw Reba, that she would be, like, one of the first main denizens chomped down on, but she wasn't. She survived. And you know what? I'm proud of her, because she kept up with, like, everyone and everything in terms of acting. Like, she kept with it. She tried. And it's hard with this kind of schlock, I think, to, like, really do it. But she sold the role, and I think she really improved the movie just from, like, her presence, honestly.
She is adorable.
Oh, I love her accent. She's great.
Yeah.
I will say, because one of the things I did while I was watching it, because I was like, all right, I need to see what else these people have done, meaning the director and the writers. So I was like, let me just see what else these people have worked on. So Ron Underwood, one of the directors, and Underwood. And he also wrote part of Tremors 2 with two other people who we'll get to in a second, but he's directed a lot of TV, like a lot of TV, like a lot of Grays, 17 episodes of Once Upon a Time, which,
wow, I mean, how far does that actually go as a compliment, though?
Some Scandal, some Castle. Like, I was, like, quite impressed by what he's been working on, and he's been working on Once Upon a Time since 2012. So, like, he's done quite a few episodes, actually, including, like, two of my favorite episodes of Once Upon a Time. So it was pretty good there. But then the other writers, Brent Maddock and S.S. Wilson, they wrote Wild Wild West, which, like, okay, that's trash, I'll watch. And then they also wrote one of my other favorite two movies, which, like, came out around the same time, Short Circuit and Batteries Not Included. Love both of those movies. I will cry every single time I watch Batteries Not Included. It's the best robot movie you'll ever see in your life. These cute little robots, they just kill you. So I was like, okay. And I looked this up early on into watching Tremors, and I'm like, all right, well, it can only get better from here. Maybe the writing will kick in soon. It didn't, but that's okay. Everyone's allowed one on their resume. So
And it's funny because this happened after some of the successes they had already had, and Universal was basically like, all right, you know, his agent was like, all right, pull out all of your ideas out of the drawer. And this is the one that they decided to go with. I mean, clearly, like, they've had career since then, but, like, this was a big deal. And Kevin Bacon had already done Footloose, and, like, and obviously Michael Gross, like, he's kind of a big deal at this point. And they just decided to go with it anyway. So I think going into it, like, Mitch, you were saying, it's obvious that it was not really trying to be super legitimate. I think in a way that it was. I think it's definitely a comedy, and it definitely feeds into some of the tropes of monster movies and stuff. But I think that they really did want to make a monster movie that was kind of different. And I am super biased, and I will say that right from the beginning. But, like, I do think that this is a really good movie. And whenever I watch it, I kind of pick up on new things. And I think the writing, like, there are some lines that are kind of duds, but for the most part, I do think it's pretty funny. I love Val and Earl's relationship, too. I think that some of the plot stuff that comes full circle is really nice. And as a franchise overall, this is one of, I don't want to say one of the best, because, like, I do recognize that a lot of people think these movies are trash, and I don't. But it constantly builds on the mythology that's established in the first movie. And when it comes to franchises, like, I really look for that kind of stuff. So kudos to them, I'd say, for building what they've built. I mean, if they've been doing this for 28 years, not straight, obviously, because there is only 6 movies, but, like, they kind of know what they're doing, or at least they found an audience who believes they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be people that follow movies that, even if they're not purposefully meant to be bad, they are, and that's okay sometimes. Like, everyone can give their best effort, and it still turns out to be really just weird and funny. It can just be the concept, and if people really like the fact that it's a bad concept, they'll still follow it. They'll make 6 movies for those people to watch. Yeah. That's okay. It's okay to have fans understand that, like, they're spending money. Like, I mean, Karen, you're admitting, like, sometimes, you know, you're like, okay, not the best movie ever, but I love it. That's completely okay. That has its own place. We don't have to super think it's, like, the most amazing critical thing. Or sometimes you just kind of get, like, good feelings, good vibes, good emotions. And you're right when you're talking about Val and Earl. They're fun to watch together.
Yeah.
They're a lot of that.
Yeah, and I did really like the fact that, you know, they really established from the start, like, this is only 14 people, and for 2 of them to leave, it is actually a huge deal because everything they know is in that town of 14 people. So I liked that whole concept. One of the things with the writing that drove me insane was they at the same time know nothing but know everything. So they're like, there's one line where Rhonda's like, why do you keep asking me, when they keep like asking her questions about the monster. But then all of a sudden, like, within like 2 scenes later, they're like, okay, so now they move like this, and they're gonna track like this, and if we do this, then it'll piss them off. I'm like, how do you it's been 24 hours, you know nothing. Like, they're turning to each other for like I loved that throwaway line of like, why do you keep asking me, because it's like, it's true, why do they keep turning to her? I mean, maybe she does have some authoritative voice as like,
she's the only scientist. Yeah.
And like, I get that, but then at the same time, it like 2 seconds later, they're like, oh no, actually we do know everything that they do, so here's the plan. And I'm like, just admit it's
not. I don't know. I don't want to question the science too much. That's a rewatchable reference for all of you guys. But like, I don't know. She looks at the body and she notices certain like features of it and kind of comes to some conclusions. And the guys witness how they attack the horse and all that kind of stuff, and they draw their own conclusions. I think it's kind of practical.
I mean, I guess that's fair. My I'm looking at my notes because I kept some notes. The other thing, the sound editing on this film is trash. If I couldn't hear some bits of dialogue, but I could hear a fly so well. Yes. I felt like it was in the room.
Like when they're showing the helmets after the construction workers.
They're showing right? anything. Like Kevin Bacon swats a fly. I could hear that fly over what he just yeah. said.
Yeah, I kept having to turn up and down the volume. And I was pretty frustrated at that because I was like, I know this is something I've kind of become accustomed with schlocky horror movies, that they do have really bad sound editing. Mm. You kind of just learn to live with it.
Yeah, it wasn't even like for jump scare purposes. I'm like, no, that's you're literally just telling me there's a fly.
Yeah,
adjacent to this scene.
You could use a remastering. I could say that much.
Yeah, that's probably fair. And this movie was like super low budget too. They did everything as efficiently and cheaply as possible. So it does not surprise me that like, and you can notice that in a lot of the shots. And we've talked about this on like Teen Wolf, for instance. Like, Teen Wolf didn't have a huge budget. And they couldn't do CGI, so they would get clever with, like, showing somebody transforming into a wolf by, like, the way you saw their shadow on the wall. And they do that kind of thing here, too, where, like, yes, you do see the monsters fairly often, but you don't always see the whole thing. You'll only see, you know, just the tongues coming out, or you'll see the way the ground moves. That stuff is all, like, very easy and fairly cheap to film, so, yeah.
Let me also say that they snuck in the F-bomb in this movie, which seems pretty significant for a PG-13 movie at this time.
I think you're allowed one, aren't you?
You are allowed one. You're sometimes, I don't know. I've seen it where it's been the reason it's rated R other ways. I've oddly really tuned into like MPAA ratings like my whole life. Don't know why. But I think PG-13 movies were kind of new because Jaws was rated PG. Because there wasn't PG-13
wow.
when that movie came out. I know, it's always really weird, because like it's definitely not, because it's pretty gory. Yeah. Like, there's eating people, right? But yeah, though this one, I was almost surprised it was already PG-13 from kind of the same reason. It had a decent amount of gore, but the F-bomb was like, oh, okay, you're definitely going to be rated R, and it wasn't. I didn't really like look into it before. I wanted to be surprised. Because like I've watched this thing, but it's always been like in a room full of people making fun of it. So this is my first time really sitting and watching it to absorb it. And it was tough. It was tough to get through at times.
I just want to say thank you guys for doing this for me.
You're so welcome, Karen. You're worth
You're
it.
You're welcome. I mean, like I said, I think that Val and Earl were great. I really liked those two playing off of each other. And the fact that, like, one of them didn't leave without the other one, I figured, like, you know, Kevin Bacon would be like, I'm going. But then they, like, did everything together, which was kind of cool.
It was cute.
Yeah, I like them. I didn't like some of the more, the other side characters. Well, like, that kid, like, what's his name, Melvin?
Yeah.
He's the worst.
Yeah.
Like, just, oh, my God. Gosh, I have written in all caps, Melvin is the worst.
Yep. You just couldn't wait to see him to be worm food. And then
I used an expletive in my notes, but it's, yes. You know, this is a PG podcast, so I'm not allowed to do that.
Did you two recognize the little girl in the pogo stick as being...
It was from the girl from Jurassic Park, right?
Yes, totally. I love her in Jurassic Park. I think she's great in that movie. So seeing her here was...
It wasn't when she was on the pogo stick, but like it was the way that the woman like held her and like you saw her face looking out the window. I'm like, you're going to perfect that face in 3 years holding a spoonful of Jell-O. Just wait.
Like, I don't think I recognized her.
Well, she doesn't act anymore. She paints. She left her acting career, it seems, as of late, to get a degree in paint. And she actually painted some awesome pictures of Jurassic Park that hang up in Spielberg's house, which I'd love to see.
That's nice. That'd be
great. Like of like the kitchen sequence. Oh, I don't know. I was reading up on her Wikipedia page. I was getting all excited that she was in this movie.
It's funny.
Yeah, I think she does an awesome job as Jurassic Park. So very, very nice treat to see her in here. Her name is Ariana Richards.
Brittany, do you have any other notes?
No, that was all of my notes, except for, you know, just general plot by plot points. A few highlights from the plot points were there's an arsenal in these people's basement. Who are they?
Survivalists.
And I also have where is it? When he goes to get the radio through the window, that was hilarious.
How about when she's driving through the window?
When she's what? Driving?
Like her hands, like they're through the truck.
Oh.
That was just, who's staring at it?
Stayed on the road.
Yeah.
Time. Well, they couldn't, well, low budget, they couldn't wreck the truck by accidentally going off-road, so. Then my final note for the end of it is 10 minutes left and the infighting is finally beginning. These people, they know exactly what these worms will do. It's been literally a day. And then starvation in all caps for some reason. I think I was frustrated with the fact that they were like, hey, we're going to starve. I'm like, you've been gone from town for 10 minutes. you didn't pack a snack.
Like, they have all those guns. They could, like, hunt some game, whatever.
So great. I also enjoyed the pole vaulting scene. I thought that that
was one's fun.
I loved, wasn't that, I actually thought that that was, like, cute and very fun. It wasn't, like, even schlocky. It was just, and, like, authentically, like, it almost felt like, now we're talking about Jurassic Park, but it kind of feels like similar for some reason to the sequence when they're petting the, I don't know the name of the dinosaurs, long-necked dinosaurs, where it's kind of like the beauty of the horror world. Like, you're seeing, like, how there can be fun in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I also was yelling at Rhonda when she put her keys in her mouth. I'm like, you're gonna drop them!
But I liked that it was her idea. And, like, she was obviously, like, a very smart and strong-willed person. And by the end, like, they did kind of listen to her, which was great. But
yeah, but you need your scientist in any given creature feature. So yeah, they can tell you why they're doing the things they are. Because it saves you a lot of exposition when you can just have someone right there telling you every sequence what's going on now.
But, hey, at least it was a lady.
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, they definitely were, like, weird and gross about it when he's describing how he wants his perfect woman to come by. And then it's kind of weird and stupid, too, that she's the woman that brings him around because she saves them all. But I don't like he's like, I guess I'm only going to go with women if she saves my life. Too bad she's not this leggy blonde I've been dreaming of. Like, you feel like he was still, like, even taking out the pictures, he was still, like, remiss. And I wasn't for that Kevin Bacon. I think you're better than that.
It's definitely a dude's movie in a lot of places, but I think they do okay with especially with Rhonda's character.
Yeah, she was actually, I think, the most interesting character, even more than Reba. I was kind of into it when she's, like, kicking the water and then she's climbing back up.
Whoa. Reba turned into, like, a badass gun enthusiast.
Yes. They were both very cool. It was a treat to see both of them. Yeah, see, amongst the shock, there were many good parts.
Yeah.
I definitely will admit that.
I definitely had to mine for them, though.
A little bit.
Just a lot of legwork to come up with a few good parts.
Totally.
That's fair. Like I said, I appreciate you guys watching it. I still love this movie. I've seen it. I can't even tell you how many times. It's one of the movies that I just watch when I need a good laugh. I was cracking up again rewatching this today. There's just one part where, like, Kevin Bacon is trying to hammer that nail into that pole, and he keeps missing it until he finally gets one good whack at it. And Fred Ward, like, looks over and is like, really? Like, it took that long? I don't know why. It just kills me. But I'm not a huge horror person, although I have been getting into it lately. I do love monster movies, though, and I think I love monster movies and, like, you know, giant spiders or giant bat movies because they don't scare me. So being able to watch something like this and not be scared is probably a huge reason why it, like, attracted me to begin with. Because I was like, yes, I can find something that's not scary. But I really love practical effects, and they did this, like, to a T in this movie, and they talk a lot about, in the behind-the-scenes features, about how they came up with different ways to do different things, and I find that fascinating. In the later movies, they kind of pair together practical effects with CGI, and I always hate the CGI, or at least, like, don't particularly like it, because the practical effects just look so much better. But yeah, I think with the puppeteering and the stuff that they did in this movie, it was, especially being low budget, it was really cool.
I will give Karen some credit with the SpongeBob pull here because, okay, so the episode we're referring to is the SpongeBob and Sandy versus the worm, which is about when the Alaskan bullworm comes to town. and they can't figure out how to track it, and Sandy has to figure it out because they're like, oh, it's blind and it's moving by sound, and then it like does eventually like go off of a cliff at the end mm-hmm. of the episode. And like the best part of that entire episode is the Patrick scene where no one's listening to the plans and Patrick's like, we should just pick Bikini Bottom up and move it over here. And so like they keep cutting to them pushing the town and they're like, push, and then they push the town away and they're all like, yay. And then the worm comes over the edge and crushes the town. But that's like the best part of the whole episode because Sandy episodes are usually annoying.
But that's okay. I can see that.
But yes, it is related.
That's good. I was so proud when I actually had no idea that this episode existed until I went to the Wikipedia page for like something completely unrelated. And I saw the pop culture references that this was one of them. And I was like, yes. This is what's going to make Brittany at least marginally invested.
As soon as I read SpongeBob in the doc, I didn't even read any further. I was like, ugh, Alaskan bullworm.
It's amazing. Okay, so I'm not going to go into huge detail, one, because I don't think you guys care, and two, like, we don't really have time for it. Although, like, if anybody wants to talk to me about Tremors outside of this, more than happy to. But as you guys know, there are 6 movies total, and I just kind of wanted to explain them to you guys a little bit because I think it's kind of interesting and gives you an idea of why these movies have stuck around the way that they have. Mitch, have you seen any of the other ones?
You know, I think I've seen, I'm going to go with 2 because I remember an extended camp sequence where it's stalking them out there. I mean, I thought it was happening in this first one because it kind of does for a quick second, but they're just like sleeping on the rocks. But no, like I remember them having to go out maybe into with horses, like 6 people. And do you know which one I'm thinking of? Is this even Tremors? Is this a knockoff of Tremors?
No, I think you're talking about The Legend Begins, which is the prequel.
Oh God. So I didn't make that up. No. Yeah. I think I've just like absorb some of it. Like I watch a lot of like AMC does like their horror fest every Halloween. Mm-hmm. So I'll just turn it on, let it play. And I probably have seen snippets on YouTube or whatever else. And I don't know that I'm also going to, maybe I'll watch 6 just to see like why they're still doing this because.
I don't think that's the one that you should start with.
No,
no.
Okay.
I will give you a breakdown if you actually want one. But I will say, like I said, one of the coolest things about this franchise is that the mythology keeps evolving. So in the second movie, no more Kevin Bacon. Unfortunately, Kevin Bacon never returns. He actually goes off and marries Rhonda, which is awesome.
Oh, well,
and you're out. But Fred Ward sticks around for the second movie, and so he kind of becomes the star of the second movie, and I think they do a pretty good job with his character, and like he meets a lady friend and everything. Like, it's a whole thing. Like, it's fine. I like it. I really like the first 4 movies, like almost on the same level with each other. But Aftershocks is the second one, and this is where we get Shriekers. And Shriekers, they're like giant turkey-looking things, so they no longer move under the ground. They have legs, and their faces open up, and they track you by heat signatures. So now they have to figure out, okay, what's the best way to hide from these heat seekers?
So I see a lot of similarities to A Quiet Place, because when I was seeing that at Alamo Drafthouse, they showed like trailers that are related to the movie you're about to see, but kind of old and schlocky, and they're showing some stuff for Tremors, and it makes so much more sense because the monsters do that in A Quiet Place. They open up their face to not heat sense, but to hear better.
Oh,
and you can't make sound, right? So that's kind of Tremors. Like, yeah. I'll give it that A Quiet Place probably borrowed that idea from Tremors. It's a critically renowned movie. It's almost like Tremors if it was just like a little bit better.
And then you have Back to Perfection, which is the 3rd movie. And this is where we get the exploding butts. So they literally call the new evolution of Graboids ass blasters, which I think is genius, but other people might not agree.
gonna sit here.
And these ones can fly, which is really funny because in the first movie, like, they mention something like, for all you know, they can fly, and they do in the movie. So that's kind of hilarious to me as a repeated viewer. And this is the first movie where Michael Gross basically stars in the movie, and every movie since then, like, this has become his franchise. He's in every movie. He's the main character.
Really?
Burt Gummer gets even crazier than he already was, and the spotlight is really put on him, and he carries it. He does a really good job, and I think that's why I wanted to interview him so badly, is because this really does become his own entity, and it's just really cool to think, like, he's been doing this for so long, and he likes this character so much that he's willing to keep coming back. Which also makes the fourth movie interesting. This one's called The Legend Begins, and this is a prequel, so they go back in time, not like time travel stuff, but it's a literal prequel.
Oh, I was about to say, like,
yeah. No, it's not like all of a sudden the Graboids evolve again and suddenly they're portals to other dimensions. No, that's not how that works. This is before, it's before perfection becomes perfection. It's called, I believe it's called Rejection Nevada. And it, Michael Gross plays his, Burt Gummer's, like, ancestor. So obviously they, like, look identical. And this guy is the complete opposite of Burt Gummer. He doesn't know how to handle a weapon. He's hoity-toity. He wears a suit. He's broke, but he doesn't want to tell anybody he's broke. And he's trying to, he's, I think he owns the mines in this place. And the town is basically going to hell, and it's a whole thing. By the end of the movie, you kind of understand why down the lineage Burt Gummer is the way that he is. But for a prequel and for something that isn't as strictly tied to the other movies, I love this movie, and I think this might be the camping scene you were talking about, Mitch, because at one point, like, there are a whole bunch, yes, of horses, and there are some guys around a campfire, and we find out the origin of the Graboids, which is, like, a huge question in the first movie because they never answer it. You don't really, yeah, know where they come from.
So four seems like the one I need to go to, because what I was going to ask is the whole draw to the series, the fact that they just never explain where they came from.
Yeah.
Now I have the ability to just skip forward to where they do.
That's cheating, but that's also totally fair if you don't actually care. Yeah, because in the first movie, like, the studio really wanted them to answer, where did these come from? And they didn't think that was a question they could answer in the short amount of time that they had, like, that these people were involved with the Graboids, which is hilarious because Brittany apparently, like, you think they know everything, but there was one question they weren't able to answer at least.
Oh God. Well, they should stop pretending.
Yeah. So they kind of give, like, you know, four different ideas as to, like, how these things could have come about. But in the fourth one, they end up answering that, which is also pretty cool. And then they took a whole bunch of time off. So the first four movies are, like, the original four movies. And I think they're all really good for different reasons. But then you get Bloodlines coming in. And this was the first movie they made in, they made Tremors in 1990. The fourth one was in 2004. And then Tremors 5 was in 2015. So there was about 10 years between the fourth one and the fifth one. And I bought it on Blu-ray as soon as it came out because I'm terrible.
Oh, God.
And I didn't regret it, actually. It was really nice to go back to it. Burt Gummer is once again the main character, and Jamie Kennedy comes in, and he has a significant role, just in case anybody is interested in not having that ruined. I won't say what the significant role is, but it's fairly interesting. I thought Jamie Kennedy was, like, fairly well known, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Like, he was in Scream 2. I feel like,
I mean, I definitely recognized him. He's the movie buff guy in 1 and 2, and then he's only played in, like, footage in 3. So I think he dies in 2.
Oh, he was Randy. In, yeah, he was in the original Scream 2.
Yeah. He was Randy. Like, he's basically what creates the trope of the trope of knowing everything that's going to happen in the horror movie, kind of like what you were saying, Brittany, like how they know everything that's going to happen to them because they've seen other movies, but this one's because she's a seismologist.
Yeah, and it was way better done in Scream. I will give them that. Yeah, and for them coming back to it after 10 years, like, I thought they did a pretty good job.
That's where he's from. I could not place Jamie Kennedy for the life of me, but he's... he's Malibu's Most Wanted. Have you ever seen
that? No, I haven't.
Oh my god, it's so good. Well, actually, it's horrible. It's really bad. But yeah. Wow, he's got a lot of Tremors.
And he's done like a whole bunch of things. But he did. I think he did a pretty good job in the fifth one, and. They end up going kind of outside of perfection, and it's a whole thing. And I think it worked fairly well, basically. And then A Cold Day in Hell just came out. I did not like this movie, unfortunately. They're always trying to do something different, and I think it didn't land for me as well as it could have. They end up going to the Arctic, so...
Hence the cold day in hell, I guess.
Right? Yeah. Which was like fair enough. It was fine. There were a couple of cool things that made that interesting, but the jokes got a little bit, I don't know. I don't care. Like, I can handle dirty guy humor and stuff, but like some of them just weren't funny to me. And some of the stepping up was just a little too much, but they made a ton of references back to the original movie, which got me really excited, especially one in particular. And I think that it's an interesting way to sort of like tie it in, I guess, and remind us that these movies are all connected. But yeah, as a longtime fan, unfortunately, A Cold Day in Hell is my least favorite. But it does also still have Jamie Kennedy and Michael Gross, which is...
I'm not going to take your word on it and just never touch it. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Never go near it.
That's...
It's on Netflix? Was it released on Netflix? Or, like, it wasn't a Netflix film, no?
No, it wasn't a Netflix film.
But it was pretty immediate. Like, when did it come out?
May 1st.
Yeah, so it's already on Netflix. That's interesting.
Mm. I mean, if it's free, you could watch it, but yeah. It's whatever. Brittany, I know you're not going to... touch any of these.
No, I'm done.
That's okay. It's okay. You can tell me to watch something that I normally would never watch.
Yeah, how about those DVDs I bought you?
Oh god, you know, when I just edited Rewatchable and you were talking about it, and I was like, man, I still haven't. I'll have to put it on the list. Keep bugging me. I'll watch it.
Okay.
Oh, and Tremor 7 has already been announced. They're talking about it. They're talking about it. So,
but then the TV series was canceled. Come on.
Right. So here's the thing, because I have a lot of feelings on it, obviously. There was apparently already a television show, which I never watched, in 2003. And it did star Michael Gross. And apparently Vivica Fox was in it, which, like, okay.
In 2003, that's like almost peak Vivica A. Fox.
I really wasn't expecting that, but, you know, if it works, it works. I might go back and watch it at some point, because especially if it has Michael Gross, then, like, you know that it's tied together, so that's cool. I'd say maybe a year, possibly 2 years ago. I'm not sure how long it's been, because I was on it, like, as soon as it was announced. Kevin Bacon apparently wanted to revisit Val, and he wanted to do a television show. It was initially, I believe, slated to be at Amazon, and Amazon passed on it, and then it went to Sci-Fi. And I was really excited because Kevin Bacon obviously still has a huge pull. He's still a huge name. So if he wanted to do a television show, like, maybe there would be a resurgence, and maybe people would give Tremors the respect that it's due. But that is not to be the case because Amazon passed on it. Sci-Fi just canceled it after shooting the pilot. which is very unfortunate. And Brittany, I know you're a big television person. How often does that happen?
A lot.
A lot?
Yeah, right now we're in
pilot season.
So yeah. Usually what the old process, because things like television has shifted over the past decade, but the process was before Amazon, Hulu, all sorts of stuff. Like those type of series, if they're sold there, they've been immediately picking up 13 episodes without a pilot, which I think is an interesting concept. But the process before was basically you sell your script, it gets picked up by a network to greenlit to shoot a pilot. That pilot is shot. And then it is reviewed by like network executives and partners. And if they could like sell it to another production, like there's a lot of negotiating and money. But if it's just not hitting the right people and it's not vibing with enough people, or they don't think that there can be enough changes incorporated into what they saw, or they'd have to like reshoot it. That's why sometimes you'll have shows that have pilots that are very different from like episode 2 because they didn't go back and reshoot a pilot.
Right.
Gilmore Girls, yes.
Yeah, or you'll have two pilots, like in the case of Sherlock, there's two different first episodes of Sherlock. So like you can watch one and then watch the other, and they're pretty much almost beat for beat the same, but one is shot in the stylized format that they eventually went with, and the other is the pilot that they shot to market it and network
right.
get it picked yeah. up. So that's what is going on right now. We're heading into upfront season with pilot presentations. Advertisers mm-hmm. will buy around it. But sometimes they'll pass on pilots before they even get there. So
yeah, which is obviously the case here. And I don't know, like I feel kind of bad for Kevin Bacon because I was a huge The Following fan. And that got canceled after season 3, which was a super bummer because it ended on what I think was a really promising note for a season 4, but whatever. And he's done some movies in between then, but I guess really the biggest like TV thing was he did I Love Dick, which I think was an Amazon show.
Yeah, and it's fantastic.
I've heard really good things about it.
And honestly, so the trailer was released today for Tremors, and mm-hmm. I sent it immediately to my brother, and I was like, wow, man, I Love Dick went off the rails, because he's like pretty much I didn't even put two and two together until I watched this trailer, because like seeing the older Kevin Bacon triggered it. He is basically like his character.
That's funny. I love it in this.
Like they could have literally probably been shot on the same like space, because he's like in the middle of nowhere, desert country guy, mm-hmm. like, you know. But you get to see his butt, and I Love Dick, so you know.
That's oh wow! If you want to, I mean, I have heard really good things about it, and I had a Kevin Bacon / Tremors like Google alert for a long time, so I used to always get the news about I Love Dick and the other things that he was doing. But yeah, the main issue that I had with the Tremors television show with Kevin Bacon was that Michael Gross wasn't going to be in it. They didn't even ask him. And for somebody who has been carrying the franchise since the third movie, that just was kind of ridiculous to me. And I guess like Kevin Bacon can do whatever he wants to do because he's Kevin Bacon, but the reason why these movies are still being made and are still popular is because the fans have taken up with Michael Gross and with Burt Gummer. That's the reason why he probably could even pitch the idea of a Tremors television show. So that kind of rubbed me the wrong way from the beginning. But it doesn't matter because the show's dead now. I watched the trailer. I'm going to let somebody else talk right now. Mitch, did you get a chance to watch it?
I did. I thought it looked excellent. I really did. I like that they brought back the idea that monsters are going to be eating cars again. That's pretty cool. And they have like a sequence that reminds me of other films that have to do with being quiet, where they're like, you know, don't make a sound. They discover someone. They're like, don't make a sound. They'll find you. And they're trying to crawl away. And then the monster gets them. I like that kind of sequence. It's very tropey, but it made me happy. So if anything, like, that looked promising. That looked actually like it gave me a little bit of like a bit of suspense thrill. I was like, ooh, that could be cool. And alas, the show's not happening. So Kevin Bacon's accent's a lot thicker. Like, he didn't have an accent. And then all of a sudden he had an accent in this TV show. I'm like, okay.
He's been living out there for a while.
Must be.
I stand by my original comment, which is it's on par with the movie. So how I feel about the movie is how I feel about this trailer. Although I did quite enjoy the new welcome to perfection sign with the like Disney character stylized graboid. It's got like, it's smiling. It looks like a nice friendly dinosaur with like snakes coming out of its mouth. And I'm like, yeah, well, if you're going to market, at least the graphic designer of that town got one job.
So. Yeah. I really liked the premise of the show. I liked the idea that he wanted to revisit the character. I think it's really cool to see him so many years later, especially because Val was very, like, he wanted to get out of that town to begin with, even before the Graboids were around. He ended up, you know, going off and marrying Rhonda and having, like, a life. And you find out in the second movie, especially, like, a little bit more of what happens with him and what he's getting up to, and it would be interesting to figure out what happened in the interim to get him to where he is now, because like, he's not looking great. And so I liked all of that. I had two major issues with the trailer. First of all, them saying that everything's been quiet and like nothing's been happening and nobody believes that the Graboids are back in the trailer. No, like, according to the movies, it's been going on for 28 years. So clearly, like, this show wasn't taking into consideration the canon of the movies, which kind of breeds bad blood for me, to be honest. I think that they could have given a shout out, even if Michael Gross wasn't asked back. Like, they could have given a shout out and been like, yeah, you know, somebody's been taking care of him all these years, but like, he's gone now or something like that, and have Val come back in and do the hero thing. And two, the Graboid looks completely different than the original, and that's just not okay. His tongue things are different.
His tongue things.
Maybe they evolved over 28 years.
That was the thing. And like, if that's the case, then fine. But right now, I'm still mad about it.
You can be mad about it. It's probably not that, but we'll never know. So,
yeah. I mean,
we have to find someone with a copy of the pilot script.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe they'll release the pilot.
Maybe. I mean, these days, social media is so big, and if people, like, I don't think a lot of people are going to make a buzz about this, you know, not like, well, Brooklyn Nine-Nine getting canceled and, like, the entire internet is on fire right now. But I think that, yeah, I think that if people do make a big deal about it, maybe somebody else will pick it up, maybe somebody will see the potential, especially with Kevin Bacon attached. I feel like there is potential there, but. Is sci-fi passed on it, though?
Yeah.
I feel like sci-fi, one, standards are pretty low. And two, like, it would have a perfect spot on sci-fi, so.
Well, sci-fi is actually kind of in a renaissance the past few years. Because they have, like, Magicians and the 12 Monkeys is really popular.
Mm-hmm. And The Expanse.
Yeah, The Expanse. So they're kind of they just had that major rebrand too, like literal branding. So I think sci-fi is like coming around. I actually like a lot of their online coverage too. Like, they've been like killing it. So maybe they were worried Tremors would
bring them back
a little.
I'll never forget that. Like, one time at 3 a.m. I was watching sci-fi, and I was watching like Paul Bunyan Axe Murderer, I think is what it's called. And it's a completely ridiculous, like, D-list sci-fi horror movie that I absolutely enjoyed every second of. But that should come as no surprise if you can tell how much I like Tremors. But yeah, I think sci-fi is doing a little better these days. Well, that basically wraps up the Tremors discussion. Was it as awful as you guys thought it was going to be?
I survived it, the discussion and the movie. So
I'm going to get you a t-shirt.
I survived Tremors.
Like Buffy.
I knew this was coming. I knew it. Keep going.
It was okay in conversation, but a chore to sit through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always fun talking to people about things they love, because then, like, even if you don't like those things, I think passion goes a long way of just making the conversation interesting. And it's great for me because sometimes I forget that people don't like this movie as much as I do. And so it's a nice little, you know, step down.
Well, if I'm up at 4 a.m. on May 14th when it's airing on HBO, maybe I'll leave it on.
Thanks. I mean, you won't, but I appreciate you saying that anyway.
But
But yeah, I just want to thank all three people who probably listened to this episode. But if you guys do love Tremors or even terrible movies in general, I'm probably the person to talk to. Maybe we'll do like a Mortal Kombat episode coming up or something. Make Mitch come on that one as well.
Oh, please save us, Karen. Don't do this to us.
Mai will come on. She'll talk to me about it.
I'll suffer through anything for you, Karen. You've earned it.
Oh, thank you. See, this is what friends are for.
I'm going to take a pass on the Mortal Kombat.
I'll give you that.
It's a lot, Brit. Like, if you thought this was a lot, just oof.
Oh. That one's actually a bad movie. I think this one's decent, but like Mortal Kombat is actually really awful.
There's nothing redeemable about that movie or its sequels or anything about it. It's just not.
I just like martial arts movies.
They're much like Jet Li and I don't know. Jackie Chan. You have a lot more fun.
But Mortal Kombat, I grew up on that video game, man.
Power Rangers, even.
God, I mean, Power Rangers is better than Mortal Kombat, and that is saying something. But yeah, anyway, so thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for being here with me and talking about it. What is coming next is the roughly 20-minute interview with Michael Gross. I completely fangirled, and I may have forgotten to record the beginning of the interview because I was so distracted. So if nothing else proves to you how much I love this movie and this franchise, that's it. Because, like, I've interviewed Kevin Bacon before, and I was fine. And then I interview Michael Gross and lose my cool.
You're so cute.
Yeah, thanks. But it was a good interview. He does talk about the movies in general, Cold Day in Hell specifically, and I did ask him a couple of questions about the television show, and we recorded this before it was canceled, so, like, unfortunately that's not relevant anymore, but at least you'll get some of his thoughts on that. Yeah, hope you enjoy that. Thanks for sticking around if you did listen to all of this just to get to the interview. Enjoy the interview. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
What is it about the role of Burt Gummer that has kept you coming back for roughly 28 years?
The important thing is the attraction to Burt has to do with his obsessive compulsive disorder, his comic paranoia. The comedy is, in fact, about imbalance. That's what makes people funny, their absurdity. And his imbalance is off the charts. So that's what keeps me coming back all those years. That being said, I've done it for 28 years, but there've only been six films in that time. I revisit him every few years, not daily, and between Tremors 4 and Tremors 5, 13 years have elapsed. So it's something I I love to do occasionally. A full diet of Bert would probably be insane. I don't know that I'd like to do that constantly. But that's why I was drawn to acting in the first place, was the variety of things that I'm able to do. I play very different characters when I'm not playing Bert, but they're all such fun.
And what do you think it is about this franchise that has such staying power?
Well, I have a kind of theory, Karen, and I think it's... I think... The original characters, this thing being based in Perfection, Nevada, this hard scrabble town in the middle of nowhere, geographically isolated, and Bert in particular, but all the people who chose to live in that town, and Bert in particular, as he's grown through the series, I think appeals to that iconic feeling Americans have about their rugged individualism. Now, they may have 3 mortgages on their house. They may go to work every day in a business suit and a tie, and they have insurance and all these other sorts of things, huge responsibilities and children to feed. Yet Americans love to think of themselves as rugged individuals who are living somewhere off the radar and don't need anyone else. I think that's a curiously American sort of perception. And I think it's one of the appeals of the anti-government thing that crops up from time to time. I mean, America was founded by not wanting a strong central government, by colonies who said, we're not even sure we want a constitution because we're not sure we want to be allied. We want a United States. So it was. I think that still appeals to people. I think it's part of the appeal for guns. Or if I just have the right gun, I can defend myself against anything. Armies. Well, of course, that's nonsense. But we like to think of ourselves as that way.
And like you said, Cold Day in Hell is the 6th movie in this franchise. So what does this one offer fans that no other Tremors movie has offered before?
Well, the fans will be the ultimate arbiter whether they like this or not. I have not done one Tremors film that I haven't had my own misgivings about something we've done or choices we've made. That's just the way I am. I pick it apart, I look at it, and I think, how could we have done this better? So, but 2 things. So the fans will be the ultimate. They will decide what's different in a big way. One of the things we decided from the beginning is we wanted to go somewhere we had never been before. Tremors films had almost always been in arid zones. We've been in Africa, we've been in Mexico, we've been in Nevada, warm weather climates. So we decided we'd take this to a cold weather climate and explore a different part of planet Earth with this. And the fact that climate change provided an opportunity for this, these monsters that had been encased in the permafrost for hundreds of thousands of years, maybe millions of years, and that the warming temperatures were bringing them out of their thaw. This seemed a perfectly natural way to go, and to just take us out of our comfort zone and see what happened. And professionally for me, I wanted to challenge Bert in ways that he hadn't been challenged before. I don't know. Have you seen it yet, Karen? Did you get a screener?
I did, yes.
Oh, okay. So then you've either seen this or at least you have the screener. But in Tremors 5, we challenged Bert personally in terms of having a child he did not even know existed. For a solitary man to have revealed to him that there's somebody who's not only related to him but wants to spend time and get to know him, is a scary thing. That's a hurdle for Bert. Bert sees himself as a solitary, that solitary, iconic American individual, and he's pretty much misanthropic. He doesn't care for other people around very much. He wants to do things on his own. It's a little hard for him to share space with somebody, so we thought that would be a challenge to have to share space with somebody who's a blood relative. personally, we thought that would be a challenge to him. In Tremors 6, it was a different challenge we wanted to throw up for Bert. That is, the challenge of having to give up control to somebody else, for a man who was so proud of his control and wants to maintain control and wants to micromanage all of his life. To have to hand over control to somebody is a difficult set of choices. To be told you can't do this, someone else must do it for you, is a huge challenge for him. And so we wanted to begin to explore what that was like. So professionally, he's always good at what he does. He's a monster hunter and he's good at it. Personally, we wanted to challenge him to deal with some of his own monsters, if you will, some of the hurdles in his own life.
And there's a major connection to the first movie in Cold Day in Hell. What drove you guys to bring in that element now?
Well, it just grew out of a feeling of homage as this was being done. First of all, fans for a long time have said, I cannot tell you how many times fans say, gee, where's Kevin? Wouldn't it be nice if Kevin Bacon, wouldn't you love to work with Reba again? Wouldn't you work with any of those casts? Can't we go back to perfection? This is always a call. And so we wanted to deal with two of those, dealing with some echoes of the past in this. Perfection being one of those strongest things, just beginning where we began all those years ago in Perfection Valley, Nevada. And as you rightly note, without giving anything away, there are throwbacks to the past here. And we wanted to see how we might pay some sort of homage to the past and recognize that as much as things change, they stay the same. And you might call it a remarkable set of coincidences, but we decided to include a few things from the past. Yes.
Well, I loved it. It was very exciting.
That I should say, we were very conscious of that. I should say it was something we wanted to do for the fans because they're constantly asking. Excuse me for interrupting you. It was really a reply to questions we've gotten from fans over years.
And as far as I'm aware, there's still no connection between the movie franchise and the show that Amazon is putting together. But do you know if they'll at least take into consideration what Bert has been up to for all these years?
I know nothing about that show. Mm. I was never approached, never asked, never told anything about it. And, so I can tell you nothing. I only what I've heard, probably the same thing you have, that after 28 years, Kevin Bacon has decided he wants to explore this character. So I'm sure that the success of what we've been doing for the past 28 years could not help but aid him in that, you know, because he's got a built-in audience based on the fact that we've carried the franchise forward. And but I have no idea what's happening. All I know is he wants to explore that character.
Well, for the sake of the fans,
but
I hope.
We shall see. We shall see. I think he's looking to do a very different thing. That's the impression I got. A couple of weeks ago, actually, I ran into Kira Sedgwick on another project, and neither of us, I think, diplomatically even talked about this subject. You know, when we met, we sidestepped it and just had a great conversation about a million other things. Mm-hmm. But I'm somewhat, as you might guess.
I've also heard there are rumors that Tremors 7 is being discussed at the moment. What's the likelihood of that happening, and what would you like to see happen to Bert in the next one?
As to the likelihood, I have no control over that. That's all decided by people who count beans at NBC Universal, right? You know, what I do is 5% show and 95% business. So show business is precisely that. And I think if there's a clamoring for it, there will be a seventh. depending on sales and things like that. All I know is there are discussions, and as far as Bert is concerned, as far as the storyline is concerned, we want to return to some things that have always been a part of the franchise, always a beloved part of this franchise, and I have some ideas for Bert about, again, more personal challenges, perhaps one of his most difficult personal challenges. So we're discussing that now. Whether it'll ever happen, God only knows, Karen. God only knows.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. Like I said before, I'm a huge fan of the Tremors franchise, so this was very exciting for me.
Well, thank you so much for your time as well, and my very best to you.